This is episode 21 of the Nothing Human podcast. Nothing Human Conversations, Three Powers Recap with Krista, part one. And they all have this idea that they are Martin Luther, that they've come to the conclusions they've come to based on scripture and plain reason.
Right.
Which is not true.
Correct.
The vast majority of them could not come to any conclusions if you just gave them reason in the scriptures. They would be like, yeah, I know, but how am I supposed to interpret this? What are the acceptable interpretations? You know, and at that point, you're like, well, that's not reason. Right. Reason doesn't care about acceptable interpretations, right. Obviously.
I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me.
Welcome to the Nothing Human podcast, a biblically informed think space for exploring and articulating all the ways we make or break sense of human experience. I'm your host, Michael Minkoff. From my youngest days, I've been fascinated with categories of thought, those often unconscious filing mechanisms that invisibly populate our premises, direct our inquiries, and ordain our conclusions. Join me as we investigate and interrogate our assumptions in an effort to articulate a more cohesive understanding of human information within the superstructure of God's truth. Well, you asked for it and you got it, though you might regret it. The next few episodes of the podcast will be an extended conversation with my sister Krista. It will function as a conversational recap on the Three Powers series. I also did video for these episodes, as you can see. If you're watching on YouTube or Spotify, I'm hoping that it's on Spotify, but if it's not, because I couldn't work it out, just head over to my YouTube channel and there's a link in my show notes on my website. Speaking of my website, all the episodes for Nothing Human and my bonus podcast Being Something Extra are available on my website, nothinghumanpodcast.com. Now, if you have any questions or comments, please comment on the relevant episode on my website and I will make sure to respond either there or in a podcast. So if you want to support me in my work, you can do that. That's really helpful to me, actually. I really love speaking and having response and not just speaking out into a vacuum. Also, please rate and review this podcast wherever you are listening to it. That really helps me a lot. And if you want to support me even further, you can become my patron for as little as $5 a month on Patreon. There's a link also to that in the show notes on my website, and I really do appreciate all of you for your support. Now let's get into this first part of my conversation with Krista. Well, I am here, as promised, after many extra episodes with my sister, Krista.
Hi.
She's sort of the originator of at least some of the reason why I'm doing this podcast.
You give me too much credit.
I'm not giving you too much credit. I'm just saying what is.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't have done this podcast for my own sake. And you're one of the few people who was like, hey, you really need to do that because I want to know what you're talking about, but I'm not going to read your articles. And or I will, but they're just hard for me. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to insult you.
No, I'm not okay. Insulted.
All right, good. So after she said, hey, you should probably go ahead and do something like this because I like the more conversational thing. And I was like, of course, you know, I'm going to come and I'm going to do this podcast just by myself. And it's going to be all very prepared and everything. And I don't know that that's exactly meeting the need. I've heard from a number of people that they want to hear more conversation, more dialogue, more feedback. So this is the purpose of that. And I'm hoping that it is functional and effective for that purpose. She came up with a number of questions and comments that from the first few episodes, of the Three Powers series. So this will be a little bit of a recap on the Three Powers series. And I don't know how many podcast episodes this will generate, but I hope that it is useful for you all. So let's get into it. This is Krista, my sister.
Hello.
And we're actually recording video of this. This is the first time I'm going to record any of these podcasts as video. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I've done little videos and stuff for, you know, Instagram reels and such. But I have not done any long form podcast type videos. So
I feel very honored.
Yeah. So I wasn't confident that I would look good enough to make that work. So I was like, oh, well, Chris is coming on.
Okay.
So at least they'll have something nice to look at. for the. Well,
or if not, there's the background of the trees.
Yeah, the trees always back there in the pond. We're actually recording this at my parents' house, and they're upstairs. And we told them we were recording, but of course, there's about 7,000 people here always.
Always.
So there's something going on. Who knows? We might be interrupted, but we're just gonna keep it going and just be natural and free flowing because that's the point of these. So go ahead. So let's talk a little bit.
All right. So before we even get into any of the episodes, mm-hmm. I'm interested to know, why did you choose Nothing Human choose the phrase Nothing Human Could Be Alien to Me? Who is that quote from and who is the speaker?
Mm. So the quote is originally from Terence, who is a Roman playwright. And he is considered by some to be the father of humanism. So a lot of people hear humanism and they think secular humanism or anti-Christian humanism. But humanism is just that branch of study that kind of developed with the Greeks, but it was in the Renaissance. It was the idea that we want to know anything that can be known humanly speaking and in terms of human culture and human realities. And Terence, the quote from Terence kind of basically means anything that could be generated by a human or understood by a human could be generated or understood by me because I am a human. So I'm not going to allow anything that is human to be alien to me. And that is having to do with all sorts of things, not just knowledge and constructed knowledge and categories of thought, but also has to do with human experience and the ways that people operate in the world. And I thought it was a good name for this podcast because I want to be able to be free to talk about whatever I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so that was part of the reason for that. I also thought it was just kind of a fun title in the sense of like Nothing Human. What are you talking about? It's almost like everything human. So I like the a little bit of the irony of that. But also since it's within the superstructure of biblical truth, there's the idea of like the truth that I'm talking about isn't ultimately human, even though it's addressing all the things that humans can know. Mm. I'm hoping that the truth that we're receiving and that I'm talking about is divine, at least in origin, if not in application. And I found this really wonderful interview with Maya Angelou, the poet.
I thought that might be who it was.
Yeah. And so I stole the audio because she's actually talking about this quote.
Okay.
And the way that she uses the quote is really wonderful. Like maybe I'll link in the show to the particular interview that I scraped this audio from. But I used it as a sample for this particular podcast because I thought she said it really well. She also quotes it in Latin because, of course, she's like super erudite and really smart. She has a wonderful voice.
Mm-hmm, she does.
And she talks about the experience of understanding that all the people who have ever hated her. So she was she was very heavily abused. I don't know if you've heard, but if you've read like I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
I'm bad about reading books to the very end, but I get little parts of it. I'm not totally familiar with it, though.
She is very familiar with trauma and treated really badly by other people. And so you can imagine that she would otherize these victimizers and abusers. Mm-hmm. But in this quote, she talks about how that too is not alien to me, that I also understand the humanness of my abusers and the people who have done all these terrible things in the world. I also have to enter into that experience. And I can't, and part of the healing and part of the wholeness of the human experience is recognizing that also as part of the human experience. So she, in that interview, she talks about that a good bit. A little bit of a kind of universalist mystic in her approach to God and things, but I still really like the interview and I really like her a lot. So I thought I could honor her and still use this quote and everything like that through this. So
yeah, that's why I did that. I like that a lot. I'm sure we'll dive back into suffering later, but it just reminded me of our discussions before about suffering. And I think that human experience of suffering, like, and that the fact that she experienced it, it's really important to, as a topic of discussion. We can get to that.
We'll talk about it.
All right. So, I was going to review the affections, intellect, will, but I think everybody's pretty clear, I hope, on that. Should you?
I hope so. But if you aren't familiar with the three powers framework, because that's what we're going to be talking about, this is kind of a recap of the 15 episodes that I already did on the three powers. So if you aren't familiar with this, you know, lucky for you, like I have 15 episodes and you can get way more about it than you could possibly ever want. So you can go and listen to those. I would recommend listening to those 15 episodes at least before you do the recap here with us.
But the recap, I do want to kind of emphasize what is the goal and the function of each. So that gives us short, I like little short words, you know, of things. So the goal of the affections, the function. So would you like to explain?
No, you can do it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to quote it from memory, but I have it written here. Affections, goal, the goal is life, ultimate life or ultimate good, mm-hmm. goodness in God. The meaning of the standard is taste, what is good and evil. The function would be love. So goal, life, function, love. The intellect, the goal is truth, standard, knowledge. The function would be knowing or naming faith. Got mm-hmm. it right so far. Mm-hmm. And then will, the goal is righteousness. The standard is the law of God. Function is choice or doing. The function is patience and or hope. That's kind of like a summary of a lot of different things that you said in a lot of your sure. podcast.
Yeah.
So would you like to say any more or do you think that that's clear?
Well, yeah, there's a little bit of a difference there. Like I would say that the ordered function, so even though it's, you know, choice is the function of the will to right. make the choice, an ordered function would be patience. So that would be right. sort of the virtue of okay. the will is patience. The virtue of the intellect is faith. The virtue of the affections is love.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's important to understand because generally speaking, when you think about life, you're thinking about it in biological terms. But the life that is in mind when I'm talking about the ultimate goal of the affections is not just a bodily life or a biological life. It is the life in the spirit of the Holy Spirit who does not have a body like men. So in those terms, I would say life has to be above or beyond merely biological existence.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Greek New Testament, it actually does make a distinction between bios, which is more that subsistence and existent life, biological life. I mean, we even call it biological life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the zoetic life, which mm-hmm. is zoe, mm-hmm. which is, we get the word zoo from it, zoological.
Really?
But, yeah.
We get the word zoo from zoe?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so because zoology is sort of like life mm-hmm. in general, like life on the planet. But yeah, zoe is usually the only word that's used when it talks about eternal life.
Mm.
So in the New Testament, it talks about eternal life. That is a life that's beyond just biological subsistence.
So the affections could be considered not just the good of your biological body, but also your eternal
the
good.
The ultimate good.
Yeah.
An okay. eternal good. Right. Exactly. Eternal life. That's a reality that the affections are able to appeal to, which is why the affections are not ultimately a bodily appetite. That's why I would disagree with Aquinas on calling the affections a bodily appetite, because ultimately the affections are able to access love beyond the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just bodily appetites. Now, I would say, though, with all of the powers, they are rooted in biological functions. So I would never say they're separated from biological functions, because the body, as I talked about in the last five episodes,
mm-hmm.
the body and the spirit are unified in such a way that they are undisentangleable. They cannot be disentangled.
All right.
And so the death of a person that results in our spiritual existence with God separate from a body mm-hmm. is not considered a final state. It's a intermediate state that they would call, and it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the souls in heaven who are under the altar praying to God and crying out to God, they're not saying, oh, this is wonderful. They're saying, how long?
Right.
How long? Like, how long is this going to continue to go on like this? How long until you fulfill what you've promised in the resurrection, in the reconciliation of all things?
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't sound to me like they're fully satisfied.
Sure.
Even though they're in the throne room of God and in his presence, they're still saying, hey, there's still some of the promise left to be fulfilled
mm.
because there's still a life that we haven't fully grasped yet.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't think about that. Okay, so In episode one, you talk about the story of Augustine and Pears.
Mm-hmm.
And you said evil in and of itself is not something to be pursued. The story itself to me is kind of confusing, and I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time, but I was thinking, like, does Augustine, I want to say Augustine, Augustine, whatever.
That's fine.
However you say
it. We know who you're talking about, okay. I think. Well, most of us do.
Okay. However you'd like to say it. Does Augustine think that stealing a pear is not a moral evil? And, like, can you just help me understand that story a little bit better? Because I've heard a lot of people bring up that story, and it always confuses me.
Okay. It's a weird story. Part of the weirdness of it is that our framework for morality is very different than Augustine's. However, if you listen, you know who, like, William Lane Craig is, the apologist?
No, I don't know who he is.
Well, he takes more of, like, a rational approach to the apologetic method. But he talks about the problem of evil or the moral problem, and he says, well, morality is like light and dark. So when he talks about good and evil, he says that it's like light and dark. So dark isn't a thing in itself. Dark is just the absence of light. And so he says that good and evil are similar. And he's conflating good and evil with righteousness and wickedness in this, as most people do, and as Aquinas also did, and as Augustine also did, because they're basically borrowing from this Platonic, Plotinus, the Neoplatonist, was the guy who came up with the great chain of being.
I would not have caught that little difference, but
anyway, okay. But yeah, so his name is spelled like Plotinus, Plotinus.
Not
so you can say like Plotinic,
all.
And it's like Platonic. What are you even talking
not
about?
Not confusing,
right?
At all.
It's like, are you? Do you mean Platonic? No, I mean Plotinic. anyway, so, but that's the guy who basically popularized this great chain of being. The great chain of being is the idea of light and dark, good and evil, where God is the ultimate good. And as you make distance from God to the angels and the demiurges and all of that, like, the goodness decreases. And so the substance of reality decreases. And the greatest of the evils is really just nothing. So you go from God to angels to human beings to animal life to inanimate objects to nothing. And nothing is like the darkness, and God is like the light. But he's putting it not in just material terms or affectional terms. He's actually putting it in moral terms, meaning that even morality is organized in that same way, that there is a moral good. And as you turn towards vice or away from virtue, it's really just that you're taking away from that moral good. That evil is not a substance in itself. It's not a thing in itself, like darkness is not a thing in itself. I find that that argument is really unhelpful. Because wickedness, even if you were to say evil is the taking of life, right? So the ultimate evil is death. And that's the taking of life, meaning it's the absence of life that creates great evil. But it is also the case that if you say, I love to do evil, you're indicating that there is a certain palpable reality to that kind of darkness. Spiritual darkness is a thing, meaning it has a reality. It has a spirit. There is such a thing as an evil spirit. That's not just, oh, well, when the spirit becomes evil, it just ceases to exist because evil is just the absence of good, right? No, an evil spirit does exist, meaning that there are things that are evil that truly are palpable, like there's a palpable darkness, not just the absence of light, but a force, a will, a being in itself, right? Augustine's not thinking in these terms. He's thinking in Platonic terms. So he's saying, you know, when I stole the pear to get something that was good, that would made sense to him because it's just a good that hasn't been permitted to him. But when he steals the pears, when he's not hungry, just for the stealing, just to take, because he threw it to pigs. They all threw the pears to pigs. They weren't hungry. They had had their fill, but they still kept taking pears and they took pleasure in this theft. He's like, so I wasn't taking pleasure in a good. What was I taking pleasure in?
And if evil was nothing,
then how could I have pleasure in nothing?
Right.
Right. And so in that sense, he's actually butting up against the problem of his categories.
Mm.
That because he doesn't have a separate category for an evil that exists, right? Which, again, it's like, well, that's because wickedness is a thing.
Right.
It is a spirit. It is a reality. And so when I say evil spirit, it's not a spirit of evil. It's not made of evil. It's a spirit that desires evil.
Mm.
And that exists.
Yeah.
That is the spirit of sin.
Sure.
And so, but if you've merely framed that in Platonic terms, you have no category to place that in. You don't know how to frame that.
Mm.
But if you distinguish between the affections and the will in this,
mm-hmm.
then you would say that affectionally speaking, evil is the absence of good, light, you know, darkness is the absence of light. But volitionally speaking, in terms of the will, you can choose darkness.
Right.
And that choice is a thing in itself. And the love of evil is a thing in itself.
Right.
And so that is the spiritual darkness, which is moral in nature, not material in nature.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. I understand it now. I wonder what was going on at that time. Like, do you know what time, what was the year that Augustine, because I don't remember facts like that, but what year was it?
I think it's like 4th century, 400s.
I didn't do a bunch
of research before this, but.
Yeah, I wonder, it would be interesting to think about what was going on in the world around it as far as religion and culture and that sort of thing. But anyway, that might be
I can tell you. So like Augustine was alive when Rome was sacked. So he wrote the City of God
mm-hmm.
about the basically having this vision for the City of God beyond just the city of humankind, because he was seeing the city of humankind fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's hard for us to put ourselves in those shoes of like, what does it feel like to be part of the Roman Empire and then for Rome to be sacked by barbarians?
Mm-hmm.
Like
what
does that feel like? I would imagine that it was something similar to the experience we had in 9/11,
mm.
Where like these people that we kind of feel like are on the fringes and they're our enemies, but like we've been handily defeating them for all this period of time. But then they score this great victory against us. You know, that's the mm-hmm. feeling you have of like, oh, are we not as great as we thought? Mm-hmm. Is this the end? You know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. I imagine that Augustine felt like he had to come up against that
mm-hmm.
and ultimately just said, well, forsake human empire.
Right.
Which good for him, because that's actually how we all should have responded in that, you know, we didn't. We were like, we're going to empire even harder, you know. But anyway,
well,
I don't want to get too political. But
then after 9/11, we had the highest attendance in church
mm-hmm.
After that incident.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, we needed to petition our God for victory in battle. So.
Yeah. Yes. More on that later. All right. In episode 2, so you talk about the title is One Power to Rule Them All.
Uh-huh. The only of my titles, by the way, that is kind of like jokey or even like where I even put a whole lot of effort into it. Most of the time, I'm just like, this is what I'm talking about. Oh. Dap, 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 dap. But this one, I was
One Power to Rule Them All. And it was a question mark.
Yeah.
Wow. One power to rule them all.
Such cleverness.
You are clever, brother. Give yourself more credit.
So bad.
So if the authorities in many communities are actually exercising the faculty of the will, what benefit is it for them to falsely claim that they are accessing the faculty of the intellect?
Mm. It's very beneficial. So you have this story of Martin Luther, who goes before the Diet of Worms, and they say ridiculous, absurd things like, do you recant? And they're pointing at all of his books, like his whole, everything he's ever published, the vast majority of which was just Catholic orthodoxy. Like there's no, so he's looking at his books and he's like, well, which parts of these books? And they're like, do you recant? And he's like, I'm not going to deny everything that I have written, right? Which mm-hmm. is what they're basically asking him to do, because he's like, I don't even think you all would disagree with the vast majority of what I've written here.
Mm.
But it was more just a matter of like having him submit. Just, you need to submit to the authority of the church to basically just tell you, you know, burn your blog down, take every article you've ever written down and never write again. Mm-hmm. If we say so, that's what you should do. And you shouldn't even have to question that or think about it. Right. This is what you need to do because you're in submission to us in this. And so, of course, you know, he has that famous line, like, unless I am convinced by scriptures and plain reason, I cannot recant. Here I stand, so help me God. You know, I can do no other. Right. That whole thing, you know. Okay, so they, everybody in the Reformation after this, like, points to that moment as being this, glorious moment of like, oh, so amazing. And they all have this idea that they are Martin Luther, that they've come to the conclusions they've come to based on scripture and plain reason.
Right.
Which is not true.
Correct.
The vast majority of them could not come to any conclusions if you just gave them reason in the scriptures. They would be like, yeah, I know, but how am I supposed to interpret this? What are the acceptable interpretations? You know, and at that point, you're like, well, that's not reason. Reason doesn't care about acceptable interpretations, obviously.
And I true mean, intellectuals are seeking truth, regardless of the cost of the truth.
Exactly. Regardless of how it lines up with other people's opinions or whether or not they're going to lose a lot for doing it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've got people like Archimedes, which clearly a true intellect. The last words he said apparently were to a Roman soldier who was about to kill him. Like, he was killed right after this. And the last thing he says is, would you please not step on my figures? Because he was working in the dust on some calculations.
Oh, wow.
And when the soldier came up, he wasn't thinking, oh, this soldier is here to kill me. He was just worried about, hey, could you not? Can you not mess up my calculations here, please? Okay, wow. So that is an intellect. Mm-hmm. All right, a will-oriented person would not be worried about their calculations when the soldier was, you know, standing over them. They'd be like, I'm about to die. I should probably figure out some way of doing whatever is necessary to please this authority figure so that I can spare my life.
Right.
Okay, so anyway, so Luther is the same way, though. I mean, he was excommunicated. He was pushed out of the church. He was hounded. I mean, he was on the run for his life. You had the Counter-Reformation that happened after that, and his life was actually really difficult. And
I think you said in a later episode that he's still excommunicated from the church.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's ever been pardoned, even though the church has obviously changed their tack on the significance of the Reformation.
Right.
So the value then, especially for Protestants, but really for anybody, to be able to say, I've come to this conclusion on the basis of reason, meaning this is an intellectual conclusion, is that you can, A, pretend to be an inheritor of this great tradition of people who stood for the truth no matter what, even though you wouldn't. You wouldn't have. You would have been like, oh, recant? Yeah, sure, all of it. Burn them. I don't care. Tell me what you want me to write. Right? And everybody who says that they wouldn't and that they have the kind of integrity necessary to bow up against that kind of authoritative imposition and manipulation, you probably don't. I mean, if you've
Do
never...
Do you think you would?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Of course I would. What are you talking about? I've done it. I've already done it. I've already been told.
I know.
Burn your blog down. That's what this young man should do, is take his entire blog down and not bother people anymore with his heresies. And anyway, my blog is still up. So,
that's good.
But I'm also no longer in that church. I was, you know, pushed out of it. And have difficulty, generally speaking, actually operating within the church as it currently is, because I'm not viewed as a person that's like trustworthy and dependable and stuff. Because I'm not. I'm not trustworthy and dependable in that way.
Oh, you mean to hold the line?
Yeah, I'm not going to toe the line. I'm not just going to be loyal to your party, whatever else. Like, if the truth leads me somewhere else, I'm going to follow the truth. And I mean, you know.
As a true prophet should.
Exactly. I'm not going to be beholden to your structures. But I couldn't sleep at night if I did. You see what I'm saying? It's not like a particular virtue. It's just like I couldn't live that way at all. Like, I would not be able to live with myself.
And that is why you're here.
That's why I'm here. Right. But, you know, again, going back to your original question.
No, here on this earth. I'm bringing this down a little bit deeper. Oh, okay. That's why you're here.
That's why I'm here on this earth. Okay. I will be here until they kill me. All right. So
Yeah. Sorry, we got on
it's
a
okay.
rabbit trail.
No, it's okay. Rabbit trails. This is what's included in the special dialogue package of the Nothing Human podcast is plenty of rabbit trails and red herrings and other things like that. That's what you guys like, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So they, when we were growing up, because we went to the same church growing up, I don't know if you remember this, mm-hmm. but our pastor would say things like, if you disagree with me, you do not disagree with a man. You're disagreeing with the word of God.
Yes.
You're disagreeing with God. Like, that's what he would say.
Yes.
Now, what that means is that by saying, I've come to these conclusions on the basis of pure reason, I have no agenda, I have no authority that's constraining mm-hmm. my interpretations or whatever. So I've just, this is the straight word of God, like interpreted through pure intellect, straight to you. And so that gives me great legitimacy. Right. I can say, basically, I'm just delivering, thus says the Lord. And actually, a true intellect can say that. Mm-hmm. The problem is that a true intellect is not coercive.
Right.
As much as a prophet might come and say, here's what you should do, the prophet doesn't have any power to make you do it.
Right.
They don't have any power to punish you if you don't do it. They don't have any power to do anything. All they can say is, hey, this is what God has said. You know, you take it, you do with it what you're going to do with it. But if you do this, this is what God's going to do. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, this is what God's going to do. And this is what's going to happen. But they're just telling you what is. They don't have power. A prophet did not have a formal position of power. So the problem with a king, for instance, claiming to be a prophet when he isn't, and then functioning like a king, even though he's claiming the legitimacy, the divine legitimacy of a prophet, is that oftentimes they're just enforcing their own opinions as if they are the word of God. And that is really destructive. It was destructive in our church. It was destructive, but you can understand why a person will want that to actually give divine credence to your own will, right?
Yeah, it's a lust for power and control.
It very much so, mm-hmm. and you know, where you don't really give people a choice. And I would say, if you're wondering, like, are these people doing that? Mm-hmm. Are these people in my life doing that? It's really just a matter of, well, are they coercive? Mm-hmm. Are they being coercive?
Right.
If they're being coercive, then they're not speaking the truth. Right. The truth is not coercive.
Okay? That's a bold statement. The truth is not coercive.
It's not. Meaning you receive it and you have to submit to it. But the truth is not going to come to you and force you. Hmm. The truth is you should welcome the truth.
Right.
But you can also deny the truth. You can reject the truth. That is your choice. Mm-hmm. And the truth can't force you to believe it. Mm. And it doesn't. It won't.
It's interesting. And I'm flashing in, like, when Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And we talk about God is truth. And just mm-hmm. to connect that the truth is not coercive to even those statements, that God is truth, but it's not coercive. He's not coercive with what the truth that he offers.
Right. And he isn't.
No, he's not. I'm confirming that. I'm just like, I was making some connections in my own mind.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So if someone's trying to get you to do something and they seem to be trying to force you to do it, that is a law. That's a command. Yes. And if they have authority over you and what they're telling you to do is not wrong, you should probably do what they're saying.
Right.
But obviously you have all sorts of evidences in the New Testament of, you know, we're going to obey God rather than men.
Right.
So like, if you're telling me to do something and I don't believe that I could do it with integrity before God, I'm just going to say, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But the truth itself, meaning truth in terms of what actually is, I mean, it just is, mm-hmm. right? It's not trying to force you to do something. You're not going to look out and be like, oh, well, this is the truth, so I must do such and such. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, I mean, you still have a choice mm-hmm. what you're going to do about the truth.
Right.
And how you're going to operate in the world. And so coercion is always will. Coercion is something that always happens within the will.
Yes.
The intellect, here's the thing, cannot be coerced. The affections cannot be coerced. It's like, can I force a person to love me?
Mm-mm. No.
No. Can I force someone to believe something? No. I can force them to say they believe something.
Sure.
I can force them to profess belief, but I can't actually change what they think is true.
That's right.
I can't force them. And I mean, you've heard of like gaslighting, I guess, is the closest thing you can get to.
Right.
But even then, gaslighting is not a reshaping of the intellect. It's a suppression of it. Meaning, even then, what I'm doing is I'm coercing the will.
Correct.
And then the will of that person, I've actually so entrapped and enslaved them that they're actually suppressing their own understanding of things. Mm. That's not a reshaping of their intellect. That's actually a suppression and abuse of the intellect. Again, even still, you can't force them to believe something that isn't, that they don't believe.
Correct.
You can maybe force them to suppress it. Right.
Yeah.
So,
and it depends on how strong your power is over them. To be able to do that.
Right.
So thank you for that clarification. All right. So in episode, I'm moving past some of the episodes. So y'all go back and listen to the different episodes. But this one comes out of episode 5. And this is on the affections.
Mm-hmm. Which you're really interested in.
I'm very interested.
So when you sent me these questions, like, well, a lot of these are very affectionately. I'll let you get to it.
No, tell me.
Well, you misinterpreted something I said because I think you wanted it to be true. Oh. Which was like, you were like, so this. Since the affections are the most important, I was like, well, I didn't say that. I don't think that.
Yes, I know. But I'm like, but they are.
But they are, though, aren't they? I was like, well, for you, probably, but.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to coerce you into that.
I cannot be coerced.
Okay, so let me make sure that this question is the question that I want. Okay, you say that your weakest subject power needs to be cared for the most, individually and in community. If my weakest subject power is, let's say, intellect, how would I go about caring for that subject power?
Yeah. So first off, the subject power is the most likely to be abused. So the partner power is the most likely to be exploited. So that's how I kind of function that. So it's like your primary power is almost certainly directing your goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying like, what's our goal? Our goal is truth, if your intellect as your primary power. But if your goal is truth and you have a partner power that let's say is affections, well, then the affections is going to be possibly exploited, meaning you're going to want to use its power, but you're going to even exploit it against its own desires sometimes for the purpose of the truth.
Mm.
So for instance, if you're exploiting your affections as a intellectual, you might cause yourself to experience things for the sake of experience that are not pleasant to the affections, but you're deriving affectional information from that.
Can you give me an example?
So you might have lots of sexual partners,
okay,
for instance, in order to experience what it would be like to have all these various different sexual partners, because there's the curiosity there.
Okay.
The intellect wants to know. And it's not going to withhold that knowledge from itself, but it's putting the affections through all sorts of suffering in all of those, you know, casual or deeper relationships in order to gain all of that knowledge and experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, the affections are being exploited because it's not like the intellect doesn't want to know what it feels like. That's part of what the intellect wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
But that means that you have to feel all those things. And there are some senses in which an intellect first person might also enjoy some degree of suffering, meaning I want to experience everything. So I want to listen to sad music. I want to listen to, I want to read books about atrocities, you know, these kinds of things, because I want to know everything. I'm not withholding any knowledge for myself, even if that means that my affections have to suffer through it, because I also want to know what it feels like. I'm not willing to just know what it is about. I want to know what the affections feel in that so that I can understand more and more and more. Sometimes the affections get kind of hurt and bruised in that process. And sometimes, you know, for the intellectual, self-control looks like saying, I'm not allowed to know those things.
Mm.
Like, I don't need to know those things. And I may want to, but I need to actually withhold myself from knowing certain things. Especially, I mean, you look at Solomon, like what was Solomon's big sin at the end of the day? It was all these various different sexual partners that then led to all this various different worship practices. For Solomon, that probably wasn't a situation where he was pursuing pleasure, and it probably wasn't a situation where he was pursuing power. It was actually probably the case that he wasn't willing to not know. So like I
can see how that would be.
I want to know everything I can possibly know in the deep, intimate mysteries of reality, right? So you can understand how that could become a real perversion of the affections.
Sure.
Right? Okay, so that's one thing. But the subject power, the subject power itself is almost always abused, meaning rather than being exploited, the subject power is usually suppressed and said, basically, you're worthless. You're not welcome here. And there are all sorts of reasons, good reasons, when you have a primary and a partner power that are functioning real well.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost always the case that the subject power would really mess them up, would really make things, you know, worse.
Mm.
So, for instance, let's say you have affections first and you have will second. Well, what is the will going to be exploited to do if your main goal is more life?
Mm.
Well, you're likely going to say, hey, will, get me the good things that I want in life. And so the will ends up being exploited to produce, find, choose, right? And all the while, the affections are accumulating what the will can produce and saying, good, love this good. Thanks for the life, will. Go get some more. But the intellect comes in and says, here's some truth. Here's some realities of what's happening. You're not happy.
Let me throw a wedge into your plans.
Yeah. This isn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you want good? Yeah, but the problem is this isn't.
Mm.
This isn't good. You are a glutton.
Mm. Right.
Ooh, I don't like that. Right? So the tendency then would be to shut it down, to be like, I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You're always bringing me bad news. It's like Ahab, you know, with Micaiah. It's like, this guy never says anything good about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, do good and he'll say better things, you know?
Right.
Well, I'm not going to do that. Now, hold on. It's better just to put him in prison, I think. Right? And that's sort of the situation that happens in the throne room of the spirit, is that when the intellect is coming in, it's oftentimes bringing painful truths to light. And so you're saying, well, how about I just shut you up, put you in the prison, don't hear what you have to say. Hey, I'm happy again. Feel so happy not knowing. You know, ignorance is bliss, that kind of thing. That's that concept. So let's say you're in that position and you're saying, oh, I really need to be more considerate of my intellect. I need to care for it. Part of the reason is you wouldn't have to. So, you know, people can oftentimes indefinitely suppress that third power and still function, like in the short term, maybe even the long term. I know people that died having suppressed their subject powers.
Mm.
You never got around, even though they paid all the consequences in their lives. I know a man who is will oriented, intellect second, affections last. Destroyed all the relationships in his life because of his unwillingness to really empathize with and recognize the importance of those relationships. Instead, it was all about like doing and performance and these kinds of things. Things you would make sense, you know. He had everything in a spreadsheet, you know, all this kind of stuff. And very organized, very capable, very smart, very successful. All the things you would expect a person like that to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, wife doesn't feel like he loves her. Kids don't feel like he loves them. And he died without having ever reconciled those things. And now his, you know, wife and his kids are just having to suffer that unresolved feeling of like, we never really had that sense that we were pleasing to this person that we loved.
Right.
But he never really loved us. We didn't feel that love from him. And I don't know all that he lost. I mean, I believe he was a believer, and I don't know all that he lost. But I will say that it is very difficult when you look at a guy like that, after all that success, that's part of the reason why he never felt like he needed to address that. It's like, I'm doing okay, right? And And nobody could have forced him. He was also the same kind. I mean, he's well-oriented, so he's about right. You know, so if you come to him and you're like, hey, I don't really feel like you love me. What do you mean I don't love you? I've done all the right things, mm-hmm. right? I've checked all the boxes. Like, how could you possibly say I don't love you? Of course I love. This is what love looks like.
Right.
Right. And then they're saying, well, I don't feel that. I don't feel that at all. That doesn't, that, you know, my affections are resistant to that. Here, we got some cool sounds going on.
Yeah, I hear it.
And so for him, it would have taken a lot of work to lift the affections up.
Right.
And awkward work. That's the thing that you got to keep in mind is that right. this would be awkward and difficult and you'd be really bad at it. Right. You've been successful in every other area of your life, but I guarantee you start trying to work on this, you're going to look like an idiot.
And you're going to fail so many times.
You're going to fail so hard. And people are just going to look at you with this look, you know, like, dude, you are pathetic.
Right.
You don't know how to communicate on that level? Right. Oh my goodness. You're like a child, mm-hmm. right? Worse than a child. I know children that are more emotionally intelligent than you. This kind of stuff. And so that's embarrassing. And for a person who, you know, is in a position of honor, like opening up that can of worms seems like not worth it.
No.
Thing is, it would have been worth it. It would have been worth it to his kids. It would have been worth it to his wife. And at the end of the day, it would have been worth it to him if he had given it a chance. But he didn't. And he knows better now. So.
Sure.
Yeah. As far as like, what does it look like to help out the intellect? Some of it is just being open to that. Open to the pain. And again, it's going to feel very uncomfortable. It's going to be like, why am I doing this? This seems stupid. Like this is not helping me. It's not fulfilling my goal of good right now. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can set aside some time where you sit down and you say, I'm going to be open to the truths that hurt me.
Which is so, so difficult because often the hurt are the idols that we're carrying. And in my own personal experience, mm-hmm. I haven't wanted to hear those truths. I haven't wanted to, because that would cause suffering, pain, like all of the things. It's rough. Mm-hmm. It's rough to be in that position. But God lovingly has kind of pushed me into that. And so I've had to open my hands and say, okay, God, this is what you're giving me. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's really, it's really hard.
It is hard. And you're, especially when you're first starting off trying to do it, you're not going to be good at it. You're going to feel like you're going to feel really awkward and really like incompetent and just, I feel terrible. This is so bad. Like, why can't I handle these little tiny things?
I know. You know? And all my life I've been a Christian. I've been, you know, with God all my life. Everything's been, and then these things happen. Suffering is brought in and it's like, I don't know. There's been a lot of revelation for me. So I totally get it. But I think that part of what you're saying is that there has to be a certain level of humility.
Absolutely.
To open that door to your weakest power to say, okay, I invite you in and I want to see you. And sometimes it's difficult to see your own face and mm-hmm. it's helpful to have people in your life that are going to speak to you because I often can't see what it is that I'm really, you know, idolizing even, you know.
Definitely, for sure. Definitely, this has to be done in community. Partly because, this is what's great, your subject power might be intellect or affections or whatever, but you find a person in your life whose primary power is that. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to be okay with you just letting things go, right? So that becomes really helpful, especially if there is love between you and trust between you. They're like, you know, you know what's really happening, okay?
And
I'm not going to let go of it,
yeah.
Right? Like we're going to address this,
right?
And
but that takes humility too, because you've got to invite people to be that close in community with you that you're willing to let somebody even give you that side eye.
Yeah.
They know that you know that they know. It's like,
I know that you know.
So that's difficult. However, it is so important and necessary to growth and even healing. Like whatever the person that you're talking about that had affections last or whatever, what what a difference it would have made for him and for his kids, and probably for healing from his past, because there's probably some story in his background that caused him to kind of gravitate towards those primary powers.
Right.
That wasn't spoken to.
Yeah, it was never addressed.
Yeah. So it's important to be in communities where you feel comfortable enough to be able to do that. And that takes people that are not going to be judgmental mm-hmm. and that are going to see themselves and their weak powers, whatever their weakest power is too.
Right.
Which is hard to find because everybody's critical, it seems. Not everybody, but a lot of people are critical and judgmental, and it's difficult.
Well, so, and you're typically critical and judgmental concerning areas where another person is not like you in your strengths.
Right. Yeah. And you talked about that in that, like how people gravitate towards certain churches mm-hmm. because that's their strong power is, mm-hmm. you know, they're speaking their language kind mm-hmm. of thing, you know, preach to the choir kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's fine. What's important, I think, to recognize, though, is that that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. So even going back to talking about will-oriented academics, it's actually okay to be a will-oriented academic. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of really great will-oriented academics. It's important to recognize that that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that when you say, oh, well, the reason I don't agree with that is because my trusted authorities disagree with that.
Right.
Okay, fine. You see what I'm saying? Like, at that point, we're not pretending that we're having a purely rational discussion.
Right.
Because the most frustrating thing in the world is for me to go in thinking like, this is your opinion that you have carefully reasoned from the scriptures, and then attempt to address that in carefully reasoned arguments from the scriptures, and then find that nothing I say, no matter how convincing, ever makes a difference, mm-hmm. right? And that's so frustrating, where I could just go in and say, oh, well, you know, you're a Calvinist. You mm-hmm. like Calvin. Mm-hmm. You like what Calvin has to say. If I have an argument, I'll argue with Calvin.
There you go.
Honestly, mm-hmm. like if I have an argument with what you're saying, I'm just going to argue with Calvin. I'm not going to bother arguing with you because it's not your argument.
Right.
Like you don't even know it.
And it, yeah, they probably don't even fully understand
it. They don't. They do not. They absolutely do not. Okay. I will tell you 100% they do not because there are things that they're not willing to question. Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to question something, you can't understand it.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
That's definitely a reality. Okay, I guess we should move to the next question.
Sure.
I'm going to move past that because we... Okay, so one of the things you talked about in one of your episodes, I think it's still, we're still in episode 5, is empathy could be sinful. The discourse on whether empathy might be sinful. So talk a little bit about that, about whether empathy might be sinful. And then you kind of connect this to the connection. Oh, no, it says in connection to tones or outright declarations of racism and misogyny. Maybe that's two separate issues.
That's two, yeah, okay, I think those
empathy.
Are two.
Okay, let's do the empathy might be sinful.
Okay, no, I don't, under any circumstances.
I agree with you. I'm just like, I'm shocked that anybody would even say that.
Yeah, it's a thing. I mean, I think there's somebody who wrote a book called The Sin of Empathy, like just like that. That's the title
of
the book.
What?
Yeah, and people are like, well, can you just say that? And he's like, look, there's a little bit of a hyperbole here. I'm trying to get people, you know, to engage.
Book?
Oh yeah, big time. Okay. To engage. You know, but if you read it, there's more nuance in the book, obviously, than in the title, which I'm sure there is. I'm
Talk
sure
about
there
coercion.
Is.
Coercion.
I know. Well, that's funny. I think you're right. But it is. It is agenda. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. The problem that people have with empathy is where it leads. Mm-hmm. Is where, not even where it leads, where it might lead. They're not even comfortable allowing the possibility of it leading someplace.
Okay.
You know, because if you're like, if you understand, for instance, like just let's say they think that transgender people are really bad. That'd be really bad. If my child was transgender, that would be really, really bad. So I don't want my child investigating that and understanding where a transgender person might be coming from. Because what if it's convincing? and they are compelled.
Right.
And they also have these similar issues, and they end up moving down that line and actually making choices in that direction. Right. You understand how this is really will driven?
Yes.
And okay. So, but I would say that the thing is, I'm not discounting that danger.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime you fully understand and feel what another person feels, then there is the possibility that you could be leaning more in their direction. That's definitely possible. I'm not saying that it isn't. But let's say you take your child and you're just like very coercively protective and sheltering of them in order to try to keep them from ever going down that direction.
Correct.
Is that going to guarantee that they never go down that direction?
No, it is not.
It's not. And not only that, in some ways, it's sort of like the, you know, you find your destiny on your way to prevent it kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes it actually creates a scenario where they're more likely to listen to these voices when they learn to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And think, well, it's obviously not you. You're lame. I hate you. So maybe I should listen to all the people you hate.
And it's happening.
And like, it happens all the time. It happens all the time. So I guess what I'm saying is, even if your goal was ultimately to secure your child or your congregation or your friend's good behavior,
mm-hmm.
if that was your ultimate goal, that's not actually necessarily the best way to secure that goal.
Right.
So even if you're just looking at it from a position of wisdom, open conversation and deep and considerate empathy for mm-hmm. other people's positions oftentimes is way more effective to help people not to go down that way.
Exactly.
Like, if I don't want my children to be drug addicts, it's not necessarily unhelpful for us to go and talk to some drug addicts.
Right.
Now, I'm not thinking, oh, my children are going to see the pleasures of the drug addiction. Mm-hmm. It's like, maybe. Maybe, and maybe they'll be curious about experimenting with those things and whatever. But what I'm saying is, I couldn't keep that from happening anyway.
No.
There's nothing.
You can try. But
ultimately, I'm not going to be able to control that in the future, especially when they become adults. So I feel like, you know, being open and telling the truth and saying, yeah, there's a lot of pleasure in premarital sex. That's why people do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or there's a lot of pleasure in methamphetamines. That's why people do them.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of things that are satisfying in transgenderism, especially for people who feel discarded
mm-hmm.
in their lives and who feel like, oh, this is the first time I'm being seen.
Right.
You know, I can understand. And that's just one thread of reasons why people right. are involved in that movement. But I mean, understanding those reasons and saying, you know, but a lot of people think, again, here's another thing. A lot of people think of explanations for why you've done things as justification
mm-hmm.
for why you've done things. Because again, you're thinking about it in terms of will.
Mm.
For me, if you explain why you did something, I'll say, well, that's no justification.
Mm-hmm.
That's an explanation. Mm-hmm. Thank you for giving it. Mm-hmm. I understand why you did what you did, why you did this stupid, horrible, terrible thing that right. you did, that you chose to do.
Right.
That doesn't justify that you did it.
Right.
That to me is a separate issue. But for especially will-oriented people, explanations are justifications.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're trying to explain, you're trying to justify.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm like, not really. I mean, not necessarily. I mean, obviously some people are doing that.
Sure.
But I can say, well, that's an explanation. And I appreciate the explanation. I appreciate knowing where you're coming from.
Right.
Doesn't justify what you've chosen to do.
Right.
Right. I mean, you can say, well, I was victimized as a child and that's why I'm a pedophile. And I'll say, that is an explanation of how your life came to the point where it came.
Right.
The choices that you've made are your choices.
That's right.
That's not a justification for the behavior that you've chosen to do. Although it helps me to understand maybe how to address some of those deep hurts and pains. Mm-hmm. And I do want to be in your shoes. Mm-hmm. And this kind of goes back to the nothing human thing. I think a lot of people are so insecure and so afraid concerning the positions that other people take.
Yes.
That they're not willing to just say, well, like, you know, a pedophile is also a human being.
Yes.
Now, I don't like, I mean, I have 5 children. I don't like pedophilia. I'm not like, you know, I think there should be more pedophilia in the world.
No.
But those people have stories and lives, and understanding their stories and lives is not a bad thing to do for them or for yourself.
Right.
And so again, it's like, that's an explanation of where, how they got to where they got. That's their story. And it's going to help you if you actually do care about them in addressing what needs to be addressed in their lives. Because it may be that there are deep longings that became perverted and deep longings that became suppressed and all these other kinds of things. And the deep longings themselves may not be wrong. And if you can help this person because of an understanding of where things went off the rails, to fulfill those longings and those purposes and in order to have them actually lead a more fulfilling life, maybe they'll always be a little broken. Maybe they'll always be a little bit off. But I feel like that's a way better approach to it in the end. I mean, other than that, your only options really are to outcast and kill, you know, like because that's what the will, that's the only options the will has, you know.
And it, you don't have to face the reality of the things that are going on with those people, like that, that you don't want to confront whatever issue that they have. You don't have to confront it if you outcast them, if you cut it off or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is terribly inhumane.
Yeah, I agree.
And it is why so much of certain people groups have separated themselves from the church at large, because we don't want to, we don't want to talk to or hear or understand the good that they are actually trying to reach out for.
It's not our that, good.
And so it's become very convoluted and and unfortunately there's a big chasm between, you know, the groups of people and even the church, and being us even being looked at, well, I'll say the Protestant, more like the conservative churches and stuff like that, as a place of safety, security.
Mm-hmm. Welcome.
And welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we need to change that.
I agree. And it wouldn't be that hard to change. I mean, we have every reason, scripturally speaking, and in the spirit and Jesus, to do that. I'm convinced that most of us are actually Pharisees, and that if we were to exist with Jesus in his time, we wouldn't have sided with the people who are on Jesus's team.
Right.
Most of us wouldn't have.
Right.
Now, that's not, I have a strong distaste for people who say, oh yeah, speak it, brother, who also would find themselves in opposition to Jesus's message and don't even necessarily realize it, right?
It's well, like, that's where you come in to bring the truth to your trusted people.
Right. Yeah. Because in the end, you know, at the end of the day, nobody was with Jesus. Mm. Jesus it's died true. Alone.
Yeah.
So, you know, I also would have run.
Yeah.
Like a rat from a sinking ship.
For sure.
And I'm just thankful that he didn't. And that, you know, that he was willing to pursue me. So anyway, all that to say, the church definitely is not the kind of place that I imagine Jesus would feel comfortable in.
I agree.
In general. I mean, there's exceptions and et cetera, but it needs to be altered. And part of the reason for the three powers idea is to say, you know, there isn't anything intrinsically superior in the way that you're pursuing your fulfillment in the world. You may very well be doing what you're supposed to be doing, and another person might be doing and pursuing something very, very different and also doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it's possible that you and he or she or whatever could actually help each other a lot to grow. Because the way of reproof is the way of life. Disciplines for reproof is the way of life. That's what, you know, Solomon says, and he would know. So we need discipline. We need change. We need to grow. And growth is never pleasant.
No, it is not.
Because it comes in and it's like, you're wrong.
Yep.
You're doing this bad thing. And not only are you wrong, you're doing a bad thing. It's going to cost you some effort and it's going to be painful to make the changes necessary to even make small progress in the right direction.
Right.
And so, you know, everything in us is like, no, right? I'd rather
thank
not.
Thank you. I'll take a rain check.
I'm not going to bother. but that's what God's calling us to do. So, I mean, we should do it. Well, I hope you enjoyed that, because there's more of it to come. And if you didn't like that one, you probably won't like the next couple of episodes. But I hope you did, and I hope you got an opportunity to watch it on video, and that was also helpful and maybe entertaining, kind of, a little bit, to see our facial expressions. And I really love my sister. I hope that you love her too, and that this was really good for you guys and gals. Okay. Right. If you have any comments or questions, please remember to navigate over to my website, nothinghumanpodcast.com, and leave a note for me on the relevant episode. And I really appreciate it. Thank you all very much. And until next time.
I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. Nothing human. Nothing human.